And I'm Reggie.
And this is R&B Talks. It is. It's actually R&B Talks. It's not a facsimile.
Actual. It's a digital rendering of the
reality,
physical manifestation of Reggie and Brian.
Yeah, I'm talking. You just said a whole lot of things in my head. Hello, Reggie.
Hi, Brian.
Hello, everyone out in the podcast universe. How are you today?
YouTube land.
YouTube land. People. I don't know what to call them. Like, I people.
Our adoring fans.
IPPillions.
The three people who listen.
Okay, so I got a question. Just a silly question to start off with.
Okay.
If you have several nemesis, is that nemesi?
I think nemesis by itself really just is a singular nemesis. There is no such thing as a plural nemesis.
So you can't have, like, four nemesises?
I think that's just...
Yeah, okay. There was a discussion.
Disqualified.
Okay. Sweet. There is no nemesis. You heard it here first, folks. There is no nemesis.
You have a nemesis, and that's it. Now, that nemesis could be a solitary organization.
That's true. It could be an entity, a single entity represented by a mass of people. Kind of like Mr. Smith in The Matrix. Like, In the third Matrix movie, when it wasn't just Mr. Smith, it was Mr. Smith's...
But keep in mind, regardless, make sure there are no kings.
That's right. No kings. Does he know the definition of what a king is? I have to ask this question. I'm going to let you have your basic premises that you don't want any kings. But you have to follow that premises up with an example of something that you're protesting against. And if Donald Trump was the king, the government wouldn't be shut down. Like, he would just say, open the government, and everybody would be like, all right, you're the king, right? Like, these people are idiots. I'm hoping this is the last gasp rattle, the death rattle of the left, because they're just morons. But that's okay.
I was reading the signs and stuff from some of the media coverage on the rallies and the few people that actually went, and it was just it was idiotic. Like, there's nothing intelligent being on these signs. They're protesting and all this stuff, it was just stupid. And I think this is it. I think if you're going to a No Kings protest on your own volition, you're not. And keep in mind, there was people being paid to be there, by the way.
Yeah. Soros made a $10 million grant so that people could go to the
Yeah,
Milwaukee
why did he
protest.
Do that, by the way, huh?
Well, he's not involved here at all.
Of course not.
He's not doing anything.
But I just think you're an idiot if you go into this protest on your own volition. And just because of just this whole thing is just really – it's completely nonsense. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Math, I don't care how good you are, the math ain't mathing. Make all the arguments you want, and I'll sit and let you ramble on like a blubbering moron for as long as you feel the need to go. But at the end, there is no king. Yeah. Trump is not a king.
Well,
the U.S. has never had a king.
They wanted Obama to be king, though.
Yeah.
I mean, they literally – there was articles and stuff written that said they wanted Obama to be a
king. Point. Okay, so let's talk about so you shut businesses down. Because of a pandemic that wasn't really as drastic as you thought it was.
Yep.
You forced people to take shots. You cost people their careers.
You twisted data.
You twisted data. You lied.
Yep.
Our lovely Biden coerced Google into censoring people, yet you called Donald Trump a king. Well, you know what? Maybe we do need a king because you guys are dictators.
I mean, it's silly. Fascism is a tool of either party, but the actual definition being displayed and promoted by the left at this point in time.
Like if you're looking for a textbook definition of fascism, it's
what
left.
They want. So anyway, I don't want to get in the weeds of that, but yesterday was supposed to be all these protests and everything, and I think the number was, they said 650,000 people across the nation. Yeah, there's 3 million people that watch football on Saturdays. So,
and here's a funny part of it too. A ton of our current left compatriots in the government showed up for what comprises less than 1% of our population. I think we should be allowed to have an eject button for people in government. I think, like, you know, I think there should be like a collective eject button, like, oh, sorry, Bernie, and just fire him out of a cannon, because he just isn't, like, when he talks, the world gets dumber. Like, when he starts talking and starts, I'll take you back to a moment. He went on Joe Rogan. I don't know if you listened to this episode, but it was so great.
I did watch one where he was on there, yes.
Well, he was on Rogan. It was his most recent one. And he brings up climate change. Well, Joe Rogan blows up his premises with nothing but fact. The temperature in the world's been going up a degree and down a degree for 100 years that we've been tracking it. He goes, what's the data? And Bernie's response to the data was, well, I didn't read that data. Oh, okay, Bernie. Well, do me a favor.
It's not. It's crazy.
Do me a favor and go back to Vermont. Look, and I know. Have some berries.
Look, Bernie, this is what kills me about the left right now. You can go back and look at Bernie Sanders' campaign, where you had all these people that were rallying behind Bernie Sanders.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Everything else. And he was against Hillary Clinton. Everybody was like, yeah, Bernie's the way to go. He's the, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then what happens? All of a sudden, he gets pulled back.
Yeah.
He starts supporting Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And all this stuff. And then totally goes away from his whole platform that he had. All his ideas were gone at that point. He's doing everything that Hillary Clinton wants him to do.
Yes, exactly. And he did it again for Biden.
For Biden, the same thing. So, I mean, I don't have any – there's no logical or intelligent reason to be a Democrat at this point. Matter of fact, and I'll even go farther, there's no moral or holistic or godly way to be a Democrat at this point.
Exactly. I agree with that statement.
Now, let's get into something a little more practical.
I know. I was excited when you sent this to me.
I know.
And by excited, I mean this. Yeah, good. So what are we talking about, Reg?
Fitness, 30 or 40 or 50. For us, it's pretty much 40 or 50.
Yeah.
And because I was thinking, this was spurred on by a comment from a friend of mine who said, because we were on the phone talking, catching up, and he was like, yeah, look, be Eddie Hall Strong, not Fabio Strong.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's absolutely true.
And that, so that was what brought this stuck in my brain. And I'm like, I was trying to figure out something to talk about today. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. We can talk about that, because it's something that I've been focusing on now for over a year.
Yeah.
I don't know how long.
I've been back on my fitness journey for 6 years.
Yeah.
And you've been on it for a year now. And he's right. Your friend is right. Like, all of the science is there. All of the studies show that the magic pill for aging is strength.
For men.
Actually, it's for women, too.
Well, I know. I want to.
Is it as high a level? But for men, it's shown to improve joint health, improve muscle health, improve bone density. It improves brain function because it fires your nervous system and causes higher blood flow to the brain. It causes vasodilation and all these things that we want to happen. Men, once we hit 35 or so, nitric oxide, testosterone, metabolism all starts to take a little bit of a dive. I think the average is 1% a year every year you lose. Now, I will say this, and as an individual who has been tested and has gone to the doctor and done this stuff, before I started my fitness journey, I went to the doctor, and my testosterone levels read right around the 2 to 250 mark, which is really low. A year into my fitness journey, I had a procedure. My testosterone was tested. It was at 600. And that was just the first year of work, doing nothing but lifting weights and light cardio at the end of the workout. My last time I went to the doctor and they tested my testosterone, it was right at 850. Like, I'm hyper. I got hyper levels of testosterone. But, again, a big myth is, testosterone make men aggressive. That's actually not true at all.
No.
But, you know, one of the things, and I've watched Reggie on this last year, you know, I've watched transformation happen. I've watched him go through the injuries and the tweaks and the things that go on. And, you know, that's one of the things that, you know.
Consistency is where you're getting at, dude.
Yeah, consistency.
That's it.
Show up. When you're sad, show up. When you're glad, show up. When you're hurting, show up. When you're tired, show up. When you don't want to show up, show up. It motivation is a lie. It has always been a lie. And it's the fitness industry sold motivation for the better part of 30 years. Get motivated and you'll get fit. No. Motivation on the average person lasts about 2 weeks before the pain kicks in enough where they're like, I don't want to do this no more. That's when the change happens. Not motivated and you continue to force your body to change. That's where the big money's made in fitness as far as your changes go.
Well, why does fitness okay, so here's the I did want to ask you this specific question. I think this is a good one. Why does fitness change after 30, 40, 50?
Because our bodies change. Our nervous systems change, our metaphysical systems change, our capabilities change. We become the aging process kicks in. Our cells, everything down to our DNA, what happens as we age and as we progress. And here's the biggest problem. And I don't think that the change in fitness actually has anything to do with age. And I figured this out as I've turned 50 and I've gotten stronger and stronger as every month has gone by. I think it's in the age when we have this preconceived notion that at some age we have to stop or slow down. Well, I can't go to the gym anymore. I'm 40. Bullshit. I'm sorry. That's all that is. You know, if you want to be strong, you'll be strong. If you want to be weak, you'll be weak. Now, are we exactly capable of doing the same things that we would have been able to do in our early, mid, late 20s, early, mid 30s? Probably not. Right. But it doesn't change what your body needs to be healthy, right? There's a very strong urge that I think on a very primal level to move, right? And I think that we become masters of ignoring that urge or distracting ourselves from that urge.
Well, I want to add to that and just say recovery time.
Yeah.
This is huge.
Absolutely monstrous.
Biggest difference I feel is like recovery time from when I was like 22 and lifting versus when I'm 48 and doing workouts and stuff.
Yeah.
You got to really be conscious of your recovery time and know that you have to be as diligent with recovery as you are with your actual workouts.
You have to sleep well, take in the right types of foods, preferably have some kind of recovery protocol, maybe stretching, maybe, you know, red light therapy bed, maybe sauna. All of those are valid forms of recovery protocol, right? But you're definitely right. For me, I've screwed up because I will go back through my workouts and I'll be like, I worked out like 5 straight days and I didn't allow a day for recovery. I haven't been eating as much, so I haven't been feeding my body, right? So recovery is, and I think that people misconceive recovery as this, oh, we'll just sit down for a little while and you'll recover. No. You know, I think part of the way to help understand it is you don't build muscle in the gym. You build muscle while you're asleep, while you're resting, while you're eating, right? You're repairing and building and making muscle stronger. So this whole myth of I go to the gym and build muscles in the gym. No, what you do is lay a foundation for muscle growth in the gym. Yeah. And you tear it down so it can be rebuilt.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and also too, like the whole thing about if you don't feel any pain, you don't get any gain.
Yeah,
well,
that's such
wrong.
Garbage.
That is so wrong.
That's such garbage.
And especially this is where it really in your, if you're older, 30, 40, 50, even 60, man, you want to stay away from that.
Yeah.
You don't want to hurt. Matter of fact, you want to, in your, especially because you consider joints here.
Yeah.
Right. If you're doing complex movements or some sort, or you're just doing like what I do with a circuit training of this or that or something else, you really have to be conscious of your joints.
And you also have to realize too, is an issue. And if you don't work with mobility, which with you, your tire flips, your hammer, those are all mobility movements. Those are keeping shoulders and hips lubricated and things like that. Mobility, you know, it's easy to go to a gym and do a bench press and a shoulder press. And I love those. I do them all the time. Mm-hmm. But I also do a mobility protocol. I also do what they call a functional routine once a week, where I work on, you know, hip flexibility and you know, I work on hip strength and things like you know, lateral strength and hamstring and all those things are part of the strength. One of the things that I, you know, a lot of guys are going to get mad when I say this, but one of the most neglected things in the gym is lower back, because most people don't understand that your core is just not your six pack. Your core is your lower back. Your core actually starts right below your chest and goes to your knees. So you see these big muscle guys and they're tilted over and they're walking around. Well, it's because they never worked their lower back and they've forgotten that those glute and hip muscles are erect and straight up. And it's just what I would encourage people to do, Reggie, honestly, is what you're doing. When you start to get to a 45, 46, 47, functional fitness is the way to go, right? And you can be strong. I can lift just heavy, ridiculous weights. I don't do it every time I work out because that wouldn't be a recoverable thing for me to do. But I worry about shoulder mobility, hip mm-hmm. mobility. And something that you wrote here that I think is true, and it's how I train right now, is it's train for the next 10 years, not right. Anybody can go in the gym for 2 weeks and tear it down and then never go back to the gym. But you have to train for longevity, right? Most of the guys, you know, there is a very large section of guys in the gym, and I feel sorry for them. They're in there working out, and they're continuing to try to do the same thing that they were doing before. Those guys are not working out for longevity. They're working out for ego.
Yeah, and I mean, along that lines, especially if you consider longevity, I think a lot of people assume you got to do like, you know, an hour, 2 hours, this or that. No, you don't. You need 20 or 30 minutes.
Well, here's the truth of it.
Or it might be 40.
60 minutes should be your absolute push, right? If you really want to get after it, because there is something called the law of diminishing returns. After 60 minutes, all the glucose in your muscles gone.
Well, if it's not, though, you're not doing it right.
Yeah, if it's not, you're not doing it right. But once that starts to decrease and your strength starts to fall, you begin to detrimentally tear down muscle that you can't recover.
Yep.
So these guys that are like, I get to the gym at 8 a.m. and I leave at 11, you're good. Now, that might work when you're 20, right? We're all hard heads and do whatever we need to do. But at the age when our bodies start to change, you have about a 60-minute window of intense exercise maximum. Most people, I would say, 35 minutes, and then take some time to cool down.
Well, and I want to say this too on that note: when you start matters, right? Yeah. So if you start from a position of you've been a sedentary lifestyle for a long time, and you know it's been, you know, we're talking years or something, you're at that 40 or 50 age, and you're like, man, I really need to take better care of myself.
Yeah.
Hence me. Then you don't want to get out there and go 45 minutes. You know, you do not want to do that. You will hurt yourself severely.
Well, it's funny. When I was in personal training, I would have guys show up 55, 60 years old, and they'd be like, well, I want an hour and a half session. I was like, no.
No.
I was like, we're going to start off with 30-minute sessions. And they'd be like, why? And I'd be like, I have to redirect your nervous system. You've been sedentary for 20 years. If I bring you in here and I throw you in here on 8-compound movement, moving some weight, I'm going to break you. And then you're never going to come back.
Yeah, you'll be hurt. I mean, really hurt.
And then, but every one of them that had a high level of success, we started with that 30-minute window. And then 6 to 7 months down the road, we've moved to a 45-minute window.
See, okay, this is where I've my 30-minute window.
Yeah.
A little bit. Now, it actually gets longer than that if you consider warm-up time and cool-down. Because that actually ends up
Which being, are actually part of the workout. Those are not excess outside the workout.
Yes.
Those are actually part of your workout.
So I've really made sure, you know, the warm-up is usually it's like, you know, it takes me a minute and a half to walk from my front porch down to where my tire and stuff is. I get the 5-pound mace out and I do some all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. That generally takes about 5.5-ish minutes, right, to warm up. And I've done some dips and stuff and blah, blah, blah. And then circuits. And but I build up. I start with a 5-pound, go to a 10-pound mace, go to a 15-pound mace, then a 20-pound mace.
Progressive overload. That's right.
Right. But that wasn't always what it was. Hmm. I mean, this is what I want to help people understand. Like, I started this whole thing just getting up an axe and splitting wood every day.
Yeah.
Right? That's how I started this whole thing.
Yeah.
And when I ran out of wood, what am I going to do? And I'm like, well, I really like doing that. So it's like, I need to find an old tire and I'll just smack that thing. And that's what I did, you know?
And I've already suggested that Reggie, when he's ready to level up, to get a couple of kettlebells, heavy kettlebells, get some 15, 20-pound kettlebells, and I'll teach you a 5 or 7 minute circuit kettlebell routine that's killer, right? But here's the thing too, self-assessment in this situation is so important. Mm-hmm. And with men, difficult, because we don't ever want to admit that we are not strong or that we have weaknesses. And I see this happen all the time. There's a certain gym that I attend, and I like to refer to it as the bad form circus. Like, it's like people mainly because there's no education. I think a gym should almost have a learning. I think you should. I think a great rule for a gym would be, if you're a new member, you have to take 2 introductory weightlifting classes, because and we always try to lift more than we can. We always try to do more than we think we can do. Because in our minds, we are 20, right? When I was 20, I used to bench press 5,000 pounds. I'm sure you did when you were 20. But you're 60, and you're not going to bench press that now, especially after spending the last 30, right? Like, it doesn't work that way. And that doesn't mean you can't get strong, right? That's the thing I wish men would understand. There's nothing wrong with saying, dude, I've let things go. I need to get strong again. Teach me how to be strong again, right? But I think that's something that I've admired about Reggie's journey, is Reggie, little bits of better. Like, oh, chop wood, man, I really feel good. I'm moving. I'm getting my winds coming back, blah, blah. And then he, out of nowhere, he's like, I bought a tractor tire and a mace. And I'm like, what? And he's like, and I've been out there doing. And I'm like, okay, get after it, big guy, get after it. And then it was little increments that he would add. And now, where he can pick that pace up a little bit, he can work a little harder, and it doesn't break him down. Intensity is important, right?
So the other day, just to qualify what you're saying, right? The 20-pound mace is ridiculous, by the way.
Oh, it is.
Ridiculous thing to throw around.
Oh, it is.
And you don't think that. I mean, you think, because, like, you know, when I used to do the powerlifting thing, I never touched a 20-pound dumbbell ever. Mm-mm. Ever. Mm-mm. You never picked it up, because it was like, swinging that thing around, this freaking 20-pound mace, is a whole other thing, man.
Oh, yeah. It's counterintuitive, it should feel like.
Oh.
It pulls you in ways that you're not used to being pulled. The same thing when you flip a tire. Like, everybody thinks, oh, just reach down and grab the tire and flip it. The mechanics of that is not as simple as you think it is. It involves you know, I call it the outdoor squat, because it's an movement.
Yeah.
From the time you squat down, your in legs, glutes are activated, calves are activated. You stand up, your lower back through your core. You basically curl the tire up to a point, and then you engage the shoulders and you push it over the head. You literally use your entire body to flip that tire.
Well, I gotta get a heavier thing. Mm-hmm. Because I'm doing those tire flips one handed now, right and left handed, just to
make it harder.
Yeah. But now I'm at the point where I really need to step it up again.
Yeah.
So I gotta find a heavier tire. Now, that one weighs roughly around 195 pounds. Is really where that one is. AI and everything else. But yeah. Anyway, let's get back to this. So, where were we at? Oh yeah, habit floor versus ceiling. I think this is the critical thing we've been talking about. Yeah. You need to have like a minimum. That's your habit, and yeah. you have to, and you just that's always going to happen.
Yeah,
right. It does. Don't look at your minimums or maximums or whatever. It's really use your floor. This is my floor. This is going to happen. Yeah.
My floor is 3 workouts a week. Yeah. That's my floor. Usually do 4 or 5, but I know that I can never go below my minimum of 3.
Yes.
Right.
But this is where you protect that floor. Yeah. I think this is what's critical about that. You protect that 3 workouts. Yeah. You get those 3 workouts yeah. in.
You don't, you know, there's, to me, it's not negotiable. Like to, and my wife will tell you, sometimes she'll get frustrated because I'm like, it's not negotiable. If you want me to be healthy and live a long life and be here for you guys, this is not negotiable. You know, it's even gotten to the point now where it's so not negotiable that if we go on a vacation or a trip, I'm either looking at what the hotel gym's got or I'm looking for the closest. Because I still have to get up and go get that workout in to feel good and healthy and stay strong. You know, and let me bust a couple of myths for you right now about workouts in general. Number one is I'm tired, so I can't work out. No, actually, you're tired, so you should work out. Supercharged and energized after it's over. You're going to vasodilate. Your oxygen levels in your blood are going to skyrocket. You're going to have all these positive things happen,
mm-hmm.
Which are going to give you energy. They're natural sources of energy. Number two, if I'm injured, I can't work out. No. When my eye was jacked going to the gym, I wasn't working with heavy weights, but I was still working out. I was still hitting the gym 3 days a week, walking on the treadmill, uphill, elliptical, stationary bike
movement.
I was doing light bench press, light bicep curl, quit going. One of the things, I'm going to be honest with you, and I state this fact, and this comes from experience more than anything else. I don't have any studies that prove this, but I truly and firmly believe that we have a problem when a doctor looks at you. Have an injury, you've hurt your wrist, you need to take it easy for 2 weeks. No, part of healing is blood flow and circulation, and it's at your highest, and you're in the nutrient dense, the nutrients that you need to heal, and the proteins and all the things that are happening, and the chemical, you know, reactions that are going on while you're healing are higher when you're moving. When you're stationary, it actually takes you longer to recover. You know, I take Louie from Westside Barbell. Had a heart attack. Had a tube in his chest. Laid around for about 3 days and then went back to his gym and started deadlifting. Said I never felt better. He goes, they told me that I couldn't do anything. He said I wasn't deadlifting 500 pounds. He says, but I had like a 25 on each end. And he says, and he said, the nervousness went away. He goes, the soreness went away faster. He goes, all these things were happening that the doctors told me wouldn't happen if I went back and worked out. So
not medical advice.
We're not medical advice. I'm not ever, but I'm just saying, if you've got a broken arm, go just put the treadmill on 3 miles per hour and tilt it up about 4 degrees and just walk for a little while. You'll be surprised how much faster your healing will go, right? You know, another one is, you know, carry, lift, sprint. It is a simple blueprint. You know, something you said earlier, you know, be strong like Eddie Hall, like an Eddie Hall or a Brian Shaw, not like a Fabio. Arnold Schwarzenegger or a Fabio. You know, magic pill to aging is strength training. So you look at guys like Eddie Hall and Brian Shaw who are going into their 40s and they're absolutely monsters. Like another one's Hafþór Bjornsson, man. Like that dude is he just set the world record again for the deadlift. Like, and he, when he picked it up, it didn't look like it took a lot of effort. Like, because they understand that it's not about getting, bodybuilding is actually an unhealthy sport. To drop down to 8, 7, 6, 5% body, that actually, you know, in a great way to, you know, go to Modern Wisdom and listen to Bumstead was on there recently, and he talks about how unhealthy he felt when he was contest ready, like the cramps and the harshness and all the things that went on. Your body that lean.
It's, I never did, like when I was in my, when I was really lifting a lot.
Yeah.
The gym I went to was where a lot of those guys were at, right? And man, you talk to those guys, and they were like, they did not feel good. There was
tired. You know,
they were focused on what body part they wanted to do or whatever. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, and the guys, I'm not talking like small potatoes here, like, you know, winning Mr. Kentucky type of thing or whatever in the heavyweight division and all that stuff. Those guys were at the gym I was at.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, they were ripped as all get out, man. And would, but, you know, they would do the whole dehydrate themselves and all this stuff. Just, you know, I saw all that. And I'm like, I don't want to do any of that. That's, and they kept wanting me to. You should do this. You should. No, I don't.
I did it for 1 year. I did it for 1 year, and I got down to about 10% body fat. And I was, the cramps alone, my calves and hamstrings cramping so bad.
Yeah.
That from the dehydration that I literally was like, this, I could have kept going, but I was like, it's not worth it. You know, it's not. And for me personally, call it crazy. There's just something about being under a really, and knowing that you better have your head right, because that's a lot of weight.
Yeah. Well, so getting back to the carry lift sprint thing, that was like a blueprint that I got from, I forgot where I got that from. But anyway, let me, the one thing I don't know if I'm really doing, I don't think I'm doing any kind of sprint necessarily.
Yeah, no.
Do the carry and lifts I'm doing religiously, but like there's not like a point where I'm incorporating a sprint type of methodology,
know,
I guess.
I don't think you need to. If you told me I'm trying to compete in CrossFit or strongman,
well, yeah,
I would say, yeah, you probably need to do some high rev.
But I guess wouldn't you say your heartbeat zone, where it's getting to during your normal workouts?
Yeah,
that's probably going to dictate where you need to go for more cardiovascular.
Well, and here's the thing that we've proven, and this is something else that I really love, and this helped in my journey a lot, is the science has disproved steady state cardio. Like it's not necessary. Runner, mega marathon runner, you're going to run the Boston, sure, get on a treadmill and run till you can't run anymore. But actually, the interval training that you do has actually been shown to be healthier, because you raise the heart rate, you lower it, raise the heart rate. It's the way I like to say it, and it's accurate, but it's kind of weird, is the muscle, it's like a rep for the heart. Like it's, you curl up, the heart gets, the bicep gets tense, you curl down, it relaxes. It's the same thing during a HIIT workout. Your heart is a muscle. So that high intensity, low intensity is like doing a rep for your heart.
Well, I remember it was, man, I don't remember what it was. Body for Life, right?
Oh yeah, I remember that book.
Yeah. And their cardio routine was not steady state at all. It was very much a, you know, it's a 1 to 10 level intensity, and you're doing this number for interval 20 minutes.
One of the original forms of high intensity interval cardio.
Yeah, and I'm to be honest, man, I that was awesome for me, because I hated cardio, and it was good for me to do.
I teach spin classes, and that is essentially high intensity interval cardio, because you have a sprint song, and you don't sprint all the way through the song. The crescendos, and you sprint and you come down. We have climb songs where you crescendo into a climb and you're there for a second and you come down. And for me, that's actually been better for me than, you know, I remember back when I first got married, man, I would spend like 50, 60 minutes just running. and thinking to myself, what a waste. Now I got lean, but it cost me strength. Like when you're burning that many calories in cardio, your strength training is going to be garbage. Like it's just not going to be there. You're not going to be able to do the lifts that you need to do. You know, and another myth is thing. If you really want to if you're really looking to build strength in a muscle, you don't need to be doing 15 reps. You need to be doing 6 to 8 heavy reps. You do a warm up set of 12 to 15 reps, get blood into the muscle, and then you bring your weight up to a moderate weight, and you want to end on a push, right? So there's a lot of one of the things that I wish I could pull completely out of fitness is bro science. It's the worst. Like it's like I just think there's like dudes that get in the gym and they're like, well, you know, let's do the math. If I do 10 reps and I get really strong with this big, but I'll do 20 with them. No, it doesn't cause the same. It doesn't cause the same nervous system reaction. So it's not going to have the same effect. It may have an effect, but it's not going to have the same effect. Right. So
let's just talk because I want to give everybody. Why I'm bringing this up, right? Because I think a lot of our problems, and especially for professionals in the U.S. who are in their 40s and stuff, we've got families and everything else, but we're at the age where we're climbing up on some. It's like we're getting ready to get into that stage where you have all these issues, and so looking at that, I thought I really don't want to tackle those issues though, being like wicked out of shape. That's going to be even worse. Yeah.
It's going to make it harder.
I don't, it's not about living necessarily longer, but it's like living better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And being able to
mobility
around and do things. Cause my dad was like, he was a broken man. You know, he didn't want to, you know, it was from doing all the stupid stuff he was doing and everything else. And a lot of my other uncles and grandparents. And I mean, it was just, it's a mess. So I thought I need to do this different.
Yeah.
So the reason this is important, I think, because I just, much better, and I won't say I feel better because that kind of is like a silly thing to say. I think I feel different. That's the key, because I'm sore, right? If I do my workout right,
you're gonna be sore.
I don't go to I hurt myself. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay. And I make sure I guard my recovery days, so I don't do too. Of my like strength training days in a row, I won't do that. That seems to be like negative for me. Like I don't feel near as made any progress. But if I do a strength day, then a recovery day. That recovery day isn't just sitting around. That's like me doing a brisk walk for 30 minutes, or that's like a rowing session for 30 minutes, or what, or even 2 or 3 walks. Sometimes I've done that too. It just depends on what's going on that day or whatever. If I'm, and I'll say my preference is the rowing. So if I do the rowing, here's what I'm doing. It's a 30 minute row, and I make sure my first like 2 to 5 minutes are like pretty light. I'm just getting movement. I'm just moving. I just want to get myself just
pushing blood through the system.
That's it.
Getting yourself prepared.
I'm not pulling it very much. And then from, or, you know, whatever it is, depending on how I feel, that 2 to 5 minute range all the way up until about the 25 minute range, I'm at a medium intensity.
Yeah.
I'm like
you're sweating, right? But you're not killing yourself.
I can breathe through my nose if I wanted to. I can probably have a
sweat. Yeah.
But I'm not pulling all out or whatever. I'm making sure that I'm just doing, you know, like a level 5 intensity level for basically 20 minutes.
Yep.
You know, now I have done the other thing where I've stepped that up a little bit and then stepped that up a little bit. But just because I'm doing so much upper body on my strength training days, I'm really trying to make sure I don't push too much on the rowing because my goals are aligned with the strength training days. That's where I want my focus to be, right? Yep. So on those rowing days, I do that. And then I make sure I have some type of cool down where it goes down to 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I'm done. Now, this you have to understand, too, that I have to worry about glucose. Because, you know, being a type 2 diabetic, I have to, like, worry about this stuff, too. So that means on my strength training days, I got to be real careful. If I push real hard on my strength, don't feel pain or whatever, but I can, my glucose can climb right up to like 210.
Yeah.
Now that's not bad. I'm not saying that's because your body is responding to your,
yeah, to with stress.
Yeah. Cortisol, yeah, and adrenal system and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But if you don't acknowledge that and you don't do something about it with a cool strength training like I do, that's why I do all that. I don't really want to, but I do that. So it immediately makes your curve. If you have like one of these glucose monitors, like you'll see it go up to 210 and it goes right back down.
Yeah.
That's what you want. You don't, if it stays up here on real high, you're a problem. So I started out splitting wood back in May, I think, of last year. And that was awesome. I was doing that every day because I just was like gun ho, right?
Well, you were enjoying it.
Oh yeah, it was so much fun.
Yeah,
moving rounds, you know, picking up these rounds, putting them on thing, splitting the wood, all that kind of stuff. I do that probably about from either 20 to 45 minutes. That's how long I was doing it every single day. Yeah. And it started out every single day. I didn't even have a recovery day, and then it got to where okay, I need to take a day off.
Yeah.
And so then I did that, and then it okay, no, anyway. So then it was like four to five days a week I was splitting wood.
Yeah.
And then I ran out and I needed, I was running out and I needed something to do. And a buddy of mine had a tire and I thought, man, that'd be cool. Cause then I could just smack it with something. And then, so, you know, I found the maces and stuff and I looked up kind of what some of the exercises are and like what are the typical things. And then to talk to you, of course. And then, so I'm doing like a side strike around the, and then I do an overhand strike and then I flip the tire.
Yep.
Right. And so that has built up, and I've done that. And, I mean, that started out where I was doing more rest. I had more rest periods in the beginning. I had not as long, and that's how I started. 5-pound mace.
Yeah.
I think a 10-pound mace is my original mace I bought. And that, I hurt my shoulder starting off with that.
Yeah.
So then I got the 5-pound mace to kind of carry that on. And instead of like just replacing the one or the other, I said, okay, I'm just going to keep the 5-pound mace. I'll do a circuit with that. I'll do a circuit with the 10-pound. And then I stepped it up to the 15-pound when I got to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and I was doing like two circuits with that. And then when that got to a point where I need to step up again, it feels like that, I got a 20-pound mace.
Yep.
Anytime I've stepped up in those things, that's at least a 2-week period of me using that with a low, like the rep count is like half,
yeah,
of everything else, just to kind of make sure everything's okay.
Well, it's just, again, you're priming your nervous system.
Yes.
Lift, like, you know, my son is in the gym now, and, you know, he came to me one day and he goes, Dad, I want to lift like you. Why am I not as strong as you are? And I was like, well, two reasons. Number one, you haven't spent the last 30 years doing what you do. I said, but my nervous system is primed for extreme lifting. So for me to do the lifts that I do, my body knows it's coming. So you have to build up. You have to progressively overload your nervous system until it's ready for that stress. And that's what you're doing, man, is, you know, I remember you would tell me, you'd be like, I chopped wood for 15 minutes today. And I chopped wood and I carried like 5 rounds. And then like 2 weeks later, you're like, I did it for 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, and in my mind, I was just saying over and over again, it's like progressive overload. He's getting there. He's gonna feel it. It's going to kick in. But, you know.
Terrible. Let me say this. I did not feel good. Let me make this very, very, very clear. The first at least 6 months.
Yeah.
I would even say longer than that, probably 8 months. It was bad. I mean, I was really hurting.
Yeah, it's the way it works, man. Like, yes. Like the another lie is, you're never going to be sore. You'll be fine. That's BS,
man. If you're doing it, if you're really making something, trying to make something happen without hurting yourself.
Yeah.
Because you're going from, if you go from like me, who's just been sitting doing IT work and occasional farm work, that kind of stuff, to then now you're doing something freaking, 5 times a week.
Yeah.
That's a big difference for your body to try to get to.
And your body fights against you. Your body wants homeostasis. It wants you to stay exactly the same because it's easier for your body that way. The moment you start exercising, your body starts throwing up every roadblock it can to stop you.
So I hurt myself too. Like I, injuries I had. I did.
One was a bicep.
Yeah, I pulled my bicep one time. My I had like a tennis elbow type of thing going on for a while. I messed up my knee, my right knee, from the doing tire flips somehow, some way. And all those things delayed things, right? Because then it was like, no, I couldn't, you know. But I went back to it. I guess this is what I want to make sure everybody understands. It was like those are short-term injuries that I had to stay away from certain things. But even then, I wasn't like just not doing stuff. I was like walking or whatever. But back, you got to keep that floor. So my floor that I do is at least those three functional strength training routines have to happen every week.
Yeah.
Period. Now, I don't have to do, like, let's say, because this has happened, even like, you know, I got 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So then I might adjust things a little bit or whatever. But the reason why I'm not saying I'm like some fitness guru. I know that's. I'm just saying. I've lost over 7 inches of my waist.
Yeah.
From the time I started to the time right now.
Yeah.
Like that's a lot, dude. In like a little over a year.
That's
right?
A lot, man. Now you have a reason for having suspenders, man.
Because all my clothes
all
fit.
Your britches are falling off. You're like me, fits. Man. None of my clothes fit nothing anymore. Fits. So.
And I mean, here's my thing. What I've done too is like. Because of that Mounjaro nonsense that was like all this, now I'm like really anti taking anything for the diabetes stuff.
Yeah.
So that's, I'm just not a carb person anymore at all.
You know, I heard, I heard Jelly Roll the other day, was doing an interview and he's lost. And they were like, well, have you been taking any, weight loss drugs, anything like that? And he's like, no. And the guy goes, why? And he goes, because I didn't want it to have an asterisk next to it. He's like, if I'm going to do this, he goes, I'm going to do it. And it was the same. Because I reached that point where I was ashamed of the way I looked in pictures. I was ashamed of myself that I'd allowed myself to get to that point. And when I was getting into it, my first thought was, well, maybe I should go see a doctor and see if they can help me. And I was like, no, man, I got myself in this mess. I'm going to get myself out. And I got to work. Right. Like, I was like, it took me 10 years to put it on. It ain't going to take me 10 days to take it off. Right. So I just went back to work. And that's where, you know, and look, man, I used to be the guy that was, oh, shame everybody who's on Ozempic and blah, blah, blah. If there's an issue and it's helping you, okay. But I do feel like there is a environment that is fostering, and it wasn't you were taking it really essentially to help with your diabetes.
That's what it was. I didn't want
to
take any more medication.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get off of other medication and do that.
Yeah. So right now that are like, you know, going in and lying to their physician in order to get these shots so that they can get the weight loss. I will look at you and say, easy come, easy go, and the other way around.
Well, I had to spend a lot of time on forums and stuff on Reddit and whatever about Mounjaro because of my issues that I had with it. And I'll tell you that a lot of them have some serious issues, but they won't get off of it or won't do anything about it because it has allowed them to, you know, continue on with whatever the hell they were doing and shot, and they're good. And yeah. I think that's look. That's fine. I'm not gonna berate you for that or anything. That's not my thing here. I don't want to do that. I think that the less you take and the more you can do yourself with your diet and how you move. And I think if we're talking particularly for those after 40 and 50 here, then you're who I'm talking to specifically. Like, the less you can intake of these pharmaceutical stuff into your body and the more you can take care of what you eat and how you move, the better off you're going to be later.
You know, and let me help dispel some dietary myths too. You know, a couple of things. Number one, diet sodas were vilified. They're actually health neutral. They really have no positive nor negative effect.
I've never seen it do anything on my glucose.
Yeah.
For those. So
you know, a lot of studies out there about artificial sweeteners. Oh, they cause cancer. All of those studies have been debunked.
Yeah, you can't find any, actually.
What I encourage people to do is use your tools, right? Like, if you drink soda, switch to diet soda. You know, if you like deep fried food, switch to air frying. Make little changes in the beginning, because it's the little things that you see that are making differences that will spur you on to go. For me, in the beginning, I just started lifting weights 30 minutes, 3 days a week. I joined a gym and I went in and I'd go in and I'd just do a kind of a little total body routine. Well, in a month, I lost like 4 pounds. And I was like, I'm not really working that hard. I'm going to do 3 days a week. I'm going to do 40 minutes. And then I lost another 5 pounds. And I was like, well, what if I threw in a cardio day where I just went in and did cardio and core? Well, that next month, I lost like 11 pounds. And I was like, okay. I was like, well, but my kind of garbagey. So then I started changing my diet. I was like, well, you know, I went to my wife and I was like, hey, can we eat more like leafy greens and things like that? And I'd like some more clean proteins. And she obliged me, man. She started making these meals, you know, big salads and lots of greens and vegetables. And I started eating that. And then all of a sudden, started feeling better. My energy levels started creeping up and I was terribly sore for like the first 4 months. Like there were days that I was like, I feel like I'm going to die. But then all of a sudden out of nowhere, man, it was like everything just started clicking. And I was like, well, I used to be pretty good bench press. Maybe I can get back into that. And I started bench pressing. And then I was like, well, you know, maybe I'm gonna do a split now. Right. If you see a little progress, you'll chase the progress. Right. But one thing I want to warn people of, too, is it is not abnormal when you for your weight to wildly vary for that first 90 days. It's, you know, I had a guy, I worked with him for a long time, and he was about 290 pounds and he was struggling. And And for the first 3 or 4 months we worked together, he'd lose a pound, gain 2 pounds. 2 pounds, gain 3 pounds. Like he would, and his diet, he was bringing me his logs. I was checking in with him every other day. And finally, we got right around that 4 month mark, and he started dropping weight steadily. And he so many times called me, he's like, man, I'm just going to quit. You know, I'm not getting what I need. And I just kept saying over and over again, I was like, you have to beat your body. It's a game of chess, and you have to be patient and beat your body. And then when he finally, his body gave in to what he was trying to do, he just started flushing weight. And I think he's 225 now. And I'm like, dude, you just had to body. You were in a fight with your body, and you had to beat your body. Once you beat your body and you tamed your body and you took control of your body, the right thing started to happen. And I think a lot of that directly correlates with how long you've been out of being.
Some people never been active, right?
Yeah, I mean, some people never. Are not, you know.
You know, that's really hard, man. And I mean, I'm just gonna say, you're gonna go through it probably, not definitely, but I mean, most likely.
I'll be honest with you, man. I've seen some stuff here lately. There's a guy, he lost 50 pounds on VR boxing. He bought an Oculus and bought the boxing games and got those controls. And he would do 6 and 8 rounds of boxing 4 days a week. And he lost 50 pounds. And I'm like, but that's in the pudding. It's not necessarily what you're doing. It's that you're doing something.
Yeah.
Right?
And here's the thing about talking about the older guys out there. Don't make big changes.
Yeah.
Like. Do one thing at a time,
yeah.
Increase one thing at a time, yeah. And make sure you're guarding your okay? Don't hurt yourself.
Yeah.
If you feel some kind of pain when you're doing a lift,
yeah.
Or an exercise, stop what, yeah. You're doing. Don't do that.
Absolutely.
When you eat, protein first. Mm-hmm. Actually, protein and veg first, depending on what the
I mix my protein and vegetables together, and I eat my carbs behind that.
You should, though, but but that'll help your body.
Yeah.
I didn't have any idea that that was a thing until I started doing this whole thing with what, anyway, eat your protein, veg first, watch your carbs. The carbs you take, look, you got to eat carbs.
Yeah.
Carbs
are not the enemy.
No. But you want to make sure you have the fiber content to take care of the carbs.
Yeah.
That's really how I'm kind of looking at it. They call it net carbs, but whatever. The thing I've found for me, the only way I can do this stuff is if I do like the Quest protein bars that are the crispy flavors. Those don't impact my glucose at all.
Yeah.
There are 18 grams of protein in them, and those as snacks or whatever, and they taste really good.
Yeah.
And so I feel like as long as I got stuff like that,
yeah,
I'm good.
Well, it's, again, use your weapons, right? Part of a fitness journey has to do with preparation. So when I leave the house every day, I take several sources of protein with me. I take a couple protein bars. I take a meat with a vegetable source of protein. I might throw a 30-gram shake in there. I may not eat it all that day, but I'm not going to get caught unprepared. Because, oh, man, I ate my protein bar and I ate my chicken and I'm still hungry. I'm going to the vending machine. And then you eat some garbage Cheetos and you feel bad and you feel guilty and you quit. Ooh, see, I can't even last 2 weeks. No, you just weren't prepared. You've got to be prepared. You're when you start, appetite is going to skyrocket because your body is looking for iron and protein and things like that to recover. So be prepared. Take a little extra with you, right? Don't take one protein bar. Take two protein bars. Don't take a half a piece of chicken. Take a whole piece of chicken. Like, it doesn't, it's not rocket science. Where, and I'm a certified sports nutritionist, I'm telling you, the biggest mistake that people make in a dietary cycle is they make it overcomplicated. There's nothing more aggravating than watching these guys on Instagram and YouTube and Facebook. Well, you have to have this many grams of protein. You're not competing. You're not a bodybuilder. You may want to be one eventually, but right now you're just trying to figure it out. So just be prepared. Take enough to satiate the appetite. Continue to move. Yes. If you are following all of these fitness influencers, you're going to quit because they're going to run you ragged.
Yeah, it won't work.
It won't work.
All right. So look, let me finalize and break this verbatim here. Some things. Minimums beat max. Okay.
Very true. One,
protect your floor.
Yes.
Let's do that. Carry, lift, sprint, scaled to your joints and your schedule, right?
Yep.
And the sprint, you know,
consistency matters, not motivation.
Yeah. Train for the next 10 years, not for the next.
Yeah. Train for longevity.
Yeah. Don't try to be.
Don't be David Goggins.
No.
There's only one David
Goggins.
There's
only one. No. So, I mean, that's the thing. Protect your floor. Make sure that floor is something you can do every all the time.
Yeah.
Make sure you're just doing something. Make small changes. You know, don't eat like an idiot. That's really what it is. I mean, like, look, it'll just so affect you. And guard your sleep.
Yeah.
Make sure your recovery is intentional just as much as you're working.
I have one more tip.
One more tip.
And I want to put this out there for the men. If your test is low, if you get it tested and it's low, don't go to a clinic. They're gonna charge you a fortune. They're gonna give you two shots a week, and every 2 weeks they're gonna tell you the shot and you need more shots. I'm gonna give you the secret.
The sauce. The
secret sauce. Start exercising and go get some Tangat Ali and some Shilajit. They're Himalayan herbs. They are scientifically proven when combined with exercise to naturally boost your testosterone. I take both. I take 400 milligrams of Tangat Ali and I take 400 milligrams of Shilajit. I take a testosterone booster, but I only take it on the days I work out. The rest of the days, I take Tangat Ali and I take Shilajit. There are ways for you to raise your testosterone without blowing a crap ton of money. Now, if you have a medical condition that is causing that to go away, then Tangat Ali and Shilajit are probably not going to help. But if you're just looking for a way to boost your general base level of testosterone, I'm telling you, nothing worked better than when I put a little Shilajit into my supplementation, and my testosterone just exploded. So, yeah, try to do the things that you know you can do that won't cost you.
Where are you talking?
I'm Brian.
I'm Reggie.